So we are reading some lines of spiritual evolution that have taken place in Earth's history. In India, of course, there is a very clear classification and we recognize these lines, but they must have taken place everywhere, surely. And we just read two of the lines of evolution, one where while one is ruling, governing, battling, and yet through a certain inner process, the way of the Gita, one arrives at that highest status of being and self. The other where one, through a process, through a boundless love, arrives at that light imperishable and dwells in the peace of the infinite. So we continue. Some of the lines, nameless, the austere ascetics without home, page 382. Abandoning speech and motion and desire, aloof from creatures, sat absorbed alone, immaculate in tranquil heights of self, on concentration's luminous voiceless peaks, world-naked hermits with their matted hair, immobile as the passionless great hills, around them grouped like thoughts of some vast mood, awaiting the infinite's behest to end. So we have, it reminds us of the Naga sannyasis and the Digambaras, and basically they have abandoned everything, and not only, and naturally to an outward eye it may appear horrible, and of course it is true that every person who undresses himself doesn't become a Naga sannyasi, so it's also true. It's not an external act, but it is possible to reach at that state, world naked, a state where all the bondages, including the bondage of shame, it's called as one of the ast bandhan. One of the bondages is the bondage of shame that drops away. So it doesn't matter to them. Sri Ramakrishna sometimes, he would hardly be wearing clothes and just moving inside his room, up and down, up and down. That kind of tremendous energy, it didn't matter. So these mystics, these seers, they have gone beyond what normally are social niceties and social conventions in which we dwell. For us, this is important. And for these hermits, they have passed beyond it. And that's what we see in the story of Shiva and Prajapati. Prajapati has set down the social norms and laws. He is the power that governs the social modes according to which human beings should behave. And his daughter Sati, she is now fallen for this man who follows no conventions. She is absolutely around him, Bhut, Pret, Pishach, all these fellows will come. Even the titans will come and bow down at his feet and he'll say Tathastu. He doesn't seem to be scared of anybody. He can, even holy men can pass by his side and he is not concerned about it. What kind of a, that kind of utter going beyond everything that human mind can conceive. And to a certain extent, in a lesser extent, how when these norms break away, it can be very unnerving. In one of the letters, Sri Aurobindo says, that's why in India, they revered the sannyasi, but they always wanted him to be outside the pall of society and never wanted their own child to become one. But then he learned no duties, no obligations. One, you know, all these are mental constructions needed for the social order. But they don't apply. When somebody asked mother about duties towards the divine and others, she says, one who has the turned toward the divine has no other duty except serving the divine. It just finishes. So it's a very different world altogether. Here itself we have, and how they can be, what outwardly we may think of as moody, like Durvasa, but they are always impelled by something deeper. We know how Auroville, before it was born, the legend of Irumbai, the Irumbai village, we must have heard about it, this around which Auroville came into existence. So there was a great sannyasi here. And he, one day there was an assembly of the local tribal leader, and a lady was dancing. And while she was dancing, one of her pile, one of her anklet came out. And this sannyasi went, picked up the anklet and tied it to her feet. Now this is absolutely unthinkable. And they all started laughing. When they started laughing, he realized that these fools, so he cursed that you don't have the vision. Now I am going from here, this land will become barren. Then they realized after a while that he is a real ascetic. He is not what it seems to the outer eye. And they rush to him. He said, all right, anyways, ek sannyasi ka shrap hai, ye to hoga. But after many years, when people from all over the world come and plow this land, then it will become fertile again. Literally, people from all over the world have come and plowed the land of Auroville. And it's become fertile. But the point is that these ascetics, look at these lines, matted here, world naked hermits, on concentrations, luminous, voiceless peaks. And what they are waiting for? Just the infinite to end everything, and they are absorbed in that play where the chapter of worldly life is closed. This was the early life of Shiva. But obviously, this is not the complete truth. So in Shiva's story, we have this very interesting thing. Because it is not the complete truth, the gods conspire and the divine conspires and everything conspires to pull him out of that state. And Shiva is once again connected to life in the world. And through that, there is so much goodness that takes place in the world, all because of that. And then his yoga becomes complete. Otherwise, he remains like a solitary ascetic who is simply waiting on the infinite. So we have here this one line which has been described. And then another line of approach where one gathers this knowledge, this love, and imparts it, shares it. One line of approach is where you abandon it and it's all yours and it's within you and you are turning it constantly upward into the infinite. Another line is where you gather it and share it and everything moves together. The seers attuned to the universal will, content in him who smiles behind earth's forms. They want nothing else except that joy of his company. Abode ungrieved by the insistent days about them, like green trees girdling a hill. Young grave disciples fashioned by their touch, trained to the simple act and conscious word. So these seers, like in olden Gurukuls, they were seers and disciples came and they grew around them. And what the seer was doing in him, the rishis, it's very beautifully described, trained to the simple act and conscious word. The simple act is the act which is almost reminds me of that line in the Gita, Yoga Karma Sukaushalam. So Shurbindu was asked this, that what is that state? He says, because all these mental layers, vital layers are no more intervening, they have become quiet. So there is no fear, expectation, desire, this, that is gone. Would I, won't I, all that is gone. So there is a direct action from the divine touching the hands. And is the action. So even in shooting an arrow, in composing a poem, the simple act. Simple act is not in the sense that we shun things which look complicated. It's about the act which is without the intervention of layers which complicate. And of all the things, the most complexity comes from the mind. So they are attuned to the divine will. And according to them, according to the will, the act flows. So here is the simple act in conscious word. So whatever they spoke came out to be true. It's a conscious word. At one place, Mother says, if you always speak the truth, then whatever you speak comes true. Because the voice is tuned to the truth. It's the power of truth. And practice of truth was a greatly emphasized. Shubindu also says, at one place he says in one of his letters, how can you hope to be a instrument of truth. If you allow falsehood to be expressed through your pen, lies. So if we keep writing lies, tell lies, and then we say mother's instrument of truth, how they are incompatible. We have to then be thorough, regardless of success or failure. That is the sadhana of truth. That okay, whatever happens, look at Harishchandra, look at Pandavas. If they spoke, they gave their word, they gave their word. And look at these stories of Harishchandra, that in dream he has given the kingdom. And he says, I have to be true to my word I have given. How can I now say that, no, I have not done it. So he is a journey of truth, ascent to truth, where slowly he gives up everything till he arrives at a state where he is worthy and capable of moksha. So the conscious word is the word which springs from the depth. It is not meant to flatter or not meant to instill fear, but a word which is attuned to the depths of our being, and from there one speaks, and not simply to flatter or simply to terrorize people. Trained to the simple act and conscious word, greatened within and grew to meet their heights. So these disciples greatened within by this kind of a training which they were receiving. Far wandering seekers on the eternal's path brought to these quiet founts their spirit's thirst, and spent the treasure of a silent hour bathed in the purity of the mild gaze. So it's a description of the true what Gurukul would be. And seekers, saints, sages, they are going through, and they wait for a while in these ashramas of old, and for a while they quench their thirst and move on. And the only place that I can think of is Sri Aurobindo Ashram, and how when Vedalankarji came here, who had translated some of the Vedas and was a great pandit, when he saw the girls and boys here and the playground and the mother's arrangement, he says, suddenly the age of the Vedic vision came alive to me. And he actually felt that this is the place where those truths of the Vedic age will be realized. Because that's how this Vedic period was, that how these people were attuned to the universal will. Bathed in the purity of the mild gaze, that uninsistent ruled them from its peace, and by its influence found the ways of calm. What was Sri Aurobindo's guidance? Even if he didn't write a single letter, he would still continue to help. So most of the letters are just to few persons. But by that peace, by that silence, he was helping humanity to advance, the disciples, by his secret influence. And that continues to be as much available now, as valid now, if we open. And then what were the schools like? We have our center of education. And what were those schools which these seers had started? The infants of the monarchy of the worlds. They were meant for these sons of kings, etc. of that great lineage. We have those Pandavas going to Dronacharya ashram or Parshurams. They were all seers. And in their ashram, these children went. The infants of the monarchy of the worlds, the heroic leaders of a coming time, king children nurtured in that spacious air, like lions gamboling in sky and sun. That we can see in the students here. They gamble like lions, totally carefree, going around, fearless. But of course, mother has broken that rule of only king children. So, now these king children has become inwardly king children. Those who carry that stamp, she picks them up. It is not based on anything external. And when they come, this is how they grow. What a freedom they lived in. King children nurtured in that spacious air like lions gambling in sky and sun, received half consciously their godlike stamp. Formed in the type of the high thoughts, they sang. So they didn't know what's happening inside. They received their stamp and they went out. We are reminded of that beautiful talk by Nalinida, the golden chain, which was given to the students. And he says, you may know it or you may not know it. But when you have gone through this place, you carry around you a golden chain. It's another matter that one may not value it. But to everybody, it's a chain of the mother and it carries you in your life journey. And this chain is given to all, regardless of anything. It's an inner chain of our protection. But then he ends very beautifully. He says, but to some she gives the iron chain. Iron chain is a beautiful chain. Mind you, he says, they are kept here. Iron chain is, you're not allowed to just wander around. Golden chain is, she goes with you, carrying, you carry that protection and her grace. But iron chain is, they are put here. And that is in the mother's eye and the mother's valuation. So we are lucky to have that iron chain, which is more precious than the golden chain. So these children also carried that stamp, godlike stamp, formed in the type of the high thoughts they sang. All around them, there were these beautiful thoughts, high thoughts, so many things here. Just by going through this process, they get exposed to such things which they could never have imagined getting it anywhere else. Just by the fact of just going through this atmosphere. People often ask what kind of education, and there are big lectures on it. It's not about that. You may do everything that is done here and yet it may not be the same thing. It's just that atmosphere of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Just imagine that right in front, opposite the Samadhi, there is the school. And day after day, these little babies grow there. And naturally, they become so fearless that they tell their parents, get lost. Because, you know, they have grown up directly under Mother Aditi's. So they really couldn't care less. And sometimes it's hard to understand them. Because they have lived in such freedom. And then they are free of all these constructions. To one of the child I said, you know, it is Darshan day. So, you know, you are supposed to prepare and all. These are all old fashioned thoughts. I have my own unique relation with the mother. Look at the words. So why are you going for Darshan? Oh, because I like to go to her room. And unfortunately, it is the only day that I can get to go. It's a novel kind of understanding. And it was an eye-opener that one can look at it like that. That I want to go every day, but I can't go. So I am going today because today is the only day. But don't confuse it that Darshan day, special relation with mother. I have my own special relation with mother. It is not like you, like him, like X. Now, you know, this kind of a thought is totally unprecedented because we all have a traditional, conventional background in which we, of course, we all can misuse that freedom, whatever. That's a different side of the story. And yet, in spite of all that, that golden chain goes. Something goes in spite of everything. They learned the wide magnificence of mood. Ah, this is lovely line. That makes us comrades of the cosmic urge. Wide, what are our moods? We talk about being moody, angry, depressed, happy. Now, very interestingly, we have these moods which even the cosmic gods experience. This is a very interesting story. Shiva's Vishad. When Shiva goes into a state of, if I have to term it technically, depression, then who will heal? And when he goes into a Vishad, and why does he go into Vishad? Because the world doesn't care for the Divine Mother. Shiva withdraws into his silences, Vishad. The whole world is getting destroyed. All the gods are saying, Lord, please come out. But he tells them, get lost. He tells Narada and all these sages, even Brahma comes and says, please. He says, sabko adhikar hai apna hisab se karne ka. You don't intervene. He tells, Brahma goes away. Vishnu comes, he says, you are doing your job, let me do what I have to do. What are those grandiose moods? There is another grandiose mood of Kali. It's another myth. Where to protect a bhakta who is actually a demon. But he has extracted one promise from Kali. That she will protect him once. Only once she will come to protect. She knows that he has evil designs, but she promises, once I'll protect you. Whatever it be. So this man now knows. So one day he is face to face with none else but Shiva in his incarnate form. So this demon knows that now I have no choice but to invoke, and Mother Kali comes. Now Shiva manifests himself and says, I am Shiva, please quieten. She says, no, I am here to protect him. Now Kali is his consort. But when Shiva insists, she assumes a gigantic form and swallows Shiva. Now what kind of a grandiose mood? Moods which are cosmic, we cannot imagine. And it's spoken of in Greek mythology and our Indian thoughts. How many of these surges, deluges, vast spaces of time, they are not ordinary impulses. We cannot understand. We think, oh, so gods are also moody like us. No. Their so-called grandiose moods are always moved by a deep truth. That's how it's a very interesting story. We should not leave it incomplete. So when she swallows Shiva, she discovers that she has swallowed her own, Lord. And she assumes the form of a widow. So Mother Goddess becomes a widow. And she goes into Vishad. She cannot come out now. Nobody can bring her out. All the gods come, try, they cannot. Then there is an internal dialogue with Shiva. He says, I cannot do anything. They pray to Shiva. He says, I cannot do anything. All my powers are now arrested. By swallowed, it means that he is helpless. He cannot act. And the mother herself has gone into a total immobility. What would be that moment of creation? Now we may look outwardly and not understand this story. But actually it is the moment of a new creation. And Vishnu knows it. He says, just wait, just wait. And when she comes out, a totally new form of creation comes, a new way of being, a new approach to the divine. All these things are born because of that magnificence of moods. So we cannot understand Durvasa. We say, what kind of rishi? You people have rishis who get angry at the drop of a hat and suddenly they curse. But every curse of Durvasa turns out to be a boon. So one apsara is cursed to become like a monkey. She becomes the mother of Hanuman. Otherwise she would have just remained an apsara dancing around in the courts of Indra. She becomes the mother of Hanuman by that curse. All the curses, the Parikshit, he is cursed by that little child. 7 days returning you will die of the same snake bite. So one would say, what kind of rishi? Thanks to that curse, Srimad Bhagavat is born. At least for us. Of course it was there existing, and Sut and Sonak Sambad is there. But for us, the way we have received the Bhagavat is thanks to that curse. So all the curses that we see in these myths are movements of a greater truth. They look like this because we all always look at things from a limited, oh, he did so bad to, what kind of curse. Suddenly Ahilya is cursed by her own husband and she becomes a stone for no fault of her. These are all social and mental ways of looking at a phenomena which goes beyond our understanding. Or Vishnu is cursed by Vrinda that you have made me suffer the loss of my husband. One day you will suffer the loss of your wife. And he accepts the curse. He returns it back, that I accept the curse and bless you that my puja will be incomplete without you. These are cosmic modes. And when we go into these stories, there are plenty and plenty and plenty of them. At one point, I almost thought of writing a book only on these. Look at these curses. They were all grace. Because in that wide, magnificent mood, the seer saw something, said something, which on a surface level was disastrous and catastrophic. And yet at a deeper level, it was something wonderful. So this was the magnificence of moods. And when we experience these states, then we understand, they learn the wide magnificence of mood that makes us comrades of the cosmic arch. For everything that takes place at a human miniature level, there is a cosmic level at which it takes place. And Sri Aurobindo at one place says, ancestors loved extremes. So any story you see, whether it's a story of truth like Harishchandra, or it's a story of love like Savitri, Draupadi, or a story of battle and conquest, they went to the extreme limits and they loved to take anything to the extreme limits of its possibility. Because if you take it to the extreme limit of human, it enters into the divine. So this is the magnificence of moods that these children grow into. One more, last. So this Sri Aurobindo's Ilion. Every time I turn down, I remember one. Magnificence of moods. Through the mouth of Helen. Helen was the incarnation of the Divine Mother, Mahakali. And of course, she was very beautiful. The face that set on sail 1,000 ships. And Sri Aurobindo tells in Ilion, through the mouth of Helen, when Priam says all efforts have failed and Priam says, no, we will fight. First time in the history, there will be a battle for love. People have battled for land and wealth. There is a battle for love. Then when Helen comes to know and she is in a private chamber with Paris, she suddenly gets into that Mahakali mode. And she says, fair is it that Troy falls and burns and empires sink because of Helen. Now who can say this? No human, it's not a human consciousness at all. Fair it is. What humanity will judge? Troy has to fall somehow because it is like a solitary empire amidst barbarism all around. Sri Aurobindo tells, that's why it had to fall. Who can make it fall? Who can make the Kuru empire fall? Draupadi, the avatar of Mahakali. And who can make Troy fall? Helen. And he says, fair it is. She doesn't feel guilty, sad. Oh, because of me, please take me back. I am doing a great sin. These are very small human ideas. She should have said ideally, oh, I am a great sinner because of me. No, please send me. I should not be the cause of such destruction. Like Arjuna saying, overcome with pity. What, Lord, you are asking me to fight and kill my own people. But God, Lord, bids him to a higher mood. Slay, if by slaying. And you know those lines in Essays on the Gita. Slay, if by slaying the world must advance. Conquer mightily or fall nobly. What lines? Magnificent lines. Only the Lord can say this. Slay, if by slaying the world must advance. Either conquer mightily, not little bit chitta-putta conquest, or fall nobly. So this is the magnificence of divine moods. Okay, no longer chained to their small separate selves, only thinking about ourselves and my good, my bad, etc. Plastic and firm beneath the eternal hand, met nature with a bold and friendly clasp and served in her the power that shapes her works. So again in Ulupi, another beautiful poem of Sri Aurobindo, we see that toward the end of 1 year, they are married only for 1 year. And Ulupi realizes that this man cannot remain tied to a typical husband. So she tells, Ulupi tells Arjuna, this is Sri Aurobindo's Ulupi. She says, you know, I know that your spirit is born for greater things. And though my heart will pain and ache, whose would not after, you know, someone like you, yet I must set you free. Go, Aryan, and conquer. Mighty deeds await for you. But this is a magnificent mood. Not thinking of separate self. Oh, my little, go out. You are meant for mighty deeds. One soul to all and free from narrowing bonds. So they are equal to all. This is the beauty of Shiva. This is the beauty of Sri Aurobindo. One soul to all. And free from narrowing bonds of Krishna. Large like a continent of warm sunshine. In wide equalities, impartial joy. These sages breathed for God's delight in things. What a wonderful state of consciousness it is. Where mere breath becomes delight. They were living for that, not for anything else, not for any other gain. Their very breathing was an action. Their very presence on earth was a work. And what were they doing? Assisting the slow entries of the gods. sowing in young minds immortal thoughts they lived. Taught the great truth to which man's race must rise, assisting the entries of the gods. This, of course, we have mother's stories where she tells one day that the four pillars of new creation I am trying to bring down in four of you. Rajangam and I think Satyakam and Satyakarma and one of them was Champaklal. In Champaklalji it was aspiration. In Rajangam it was devotion. Some she was bringing down Brahma, Brahma's consciousness, Varuna's consciousness. Can we even imagine that what kind of action this was? But later on, of course, she removed all that because the supramental creation had to come. Sure, she had the word of creation, and she goes and tells Sri Aurobindo, after all these gods are entering, and in Sri Aurobindo, of course, the Lord of Lords, Sri Krishna. And then she goes and tells Sri Aurobindo, I have the word of creation. So she just wants his yes. So she'll have a totally a creation which nobody can ever imagine. And Sri Aurobindo looks at her and says, I know, because he has already experienced Krishna come down into the material. I know we can form a great, very great religion with this. The greatest that earth has ever seen. The whole earth will bow at her feet. But we don't want that. Nothing short of the supramental. And look at the mother's obedience, surrender, renunciation. She knew it with her inner consciousness. Within 2 hours, she wiped it away. So people call that as the golden period of the ashram. But it's just short of the golden. So that's why it was wiped away. And then the hard labor started. The inconscient, subconscient. You see the letters after that. Everybody started getting into the grind mill. Because now the preparation has to be for the supramental. Nothing short of that. But this is about that past. Or open the gates of freedom to a few, imparting to our struggling world the light. So these were seers who were imparting that light to the world. They breathed like spirits from time's dull yoke released. Comrades and vessels of the cosmic force. They were not driven by ordinary desires and ordinary energy, but something else. They were comrades of the cosmic force, one with the gods. They could even tell the gods to stop. Such was their power. Even women, Anusuya, how she could even tell the gods, oh, you guys have come to test me. Become like babies. Sleep in that cot. She gives them food and poor Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh become little babies. And then their wives come searching because they were the original culprit. Then they ask, "By madam, please have my husbands come here by chance." Oh, acha, acha, those three babies. Go and find out who is yours. Take them away. I don't know which is yours. And then they pray, please. Mother was very happy, amused as the word goes, when she watched this film. She said, yes, very beautiful. And then she said, only human beings have this possibility of going beyond the gods because they carry in themselves the psychic being. So human beings can go beyond the gods. And what power can be unleashed with that? That they can order the gods, become like children, babes, consciousness of a baby. So this is the consciousness in which they had risen, comrades and vessels of the cosmic force. Using a natural mastery like the sun's, their speech, their silence was a help to earth. So whether they spoke or they refrained from speaking, it was a help to earth. A magic happiness flowed from their touch. What kind of people were they? Just in their presence, there was a joy, magic happiness flowed from their touch. Oneness was sovereign in that sylvan peace. The wild beast joined in friendship with its prey. So this was a place where it is said that about Raman Maharishi, the tiger and the deer could coexist. Here I have seen a little lamb. Lamb means that बकरी का बच्चा, किड, किड अनफॉर्चुनेटली ऑल्सो मीन्स ए ह्यूमन किड, सो द किड, द गोट्स चाइल्ड जम्पिंग, एंड देर वॉज अ डॉग विच वॉज बार्किंग अर्ली डेज आई हैव सीन, एंड दिस किड वॉज जम्पिंग ऑन फूट एंड शूइंग अवे, एंड द डॉग इवेंचुअली रिट्रीटेड एंड वेंट अवे. सो आई वॉज वॉचिंग द सीन, आई सेड माँ के नगरी में ऐसा हो सकता है, दिस किड इज जम्पिंग विद अ जॉय. And then the thought occurred, actually he was not threatening this dog. He felt a reflection of his consciousness. He wanted to play. He found a good object to play and was wanting to play, but this dog probably couldn't handle so much of energy and just retreated and went away. So the wild beast and the prey came together, persuading the hatred and the strife to cease. The love that flows from the one mother's breast healed with their hearts the hard and wounded world. How people would go to mother with their petty quarrels, petty strife, petty difficulties, and to each one she will say something which will make them feel, ah, mother loves me, and believe that she does not love the other person. And sometimes when they would compare notes, they would say, what? She said this to you also? Mother. Then they would write again, mother, why did you say this to X? Then mother will again pacify. Her love is meant for all. It's not meant for few special elite. But it's our narrowness. And how she was healing the strife. Others escaped from the confines of thought, still beyond, not still beyond. These are different, they are not hierarchically arranged. So they are different approaches. Others escaped from the confines of thought, those who deconstruct, like the Zen Buddhist, the Zen monks, confines of thought, systems, philosophy, to where mind motionless sleeps, waiting light's birth. The mind has entered into a state of calm passivity. But it has not yet got the light. Constructions and percepts have fallen away. Systems and philosophy, one is no more bound to these paradigms. And yet, what that truth is, it's yet to be born. To where mind sleeps, waiting light's birth, and came back quivering with a nameless force. Drunk with a wine of lightning in their cells, they experienced a joy by the touch of that state. Intuitive knowledge leaping into speech, seized, vibrant, kindling with the inspired word. So they too shared something of that truth, something of that light, even though they had not seen it, not risen into it, and their speech was full of the burden of an inspired, illumined consciousness. Hearing the subtle voice that clothes the heaven. This is the truth hearing of the Vedas. Truth hearing is not that somebody actually hears like a prompter in a play and starts scribing. Truth hearing is that when the inner ear is attuned to the truth, then when one writes and speaks, it is that using the speech and the mouth and the voice and the words as an instrument and vehicle for transmitting that consciousness. So that's truth hearing. Same thing with truth seeing. Truth seeing is not seeing some wonderful figures. Of course, one may see that, but it is seeing the truth which is hidden behind things. So here it's about truth hearing of the Vedic rishis. Carrying the splendor that has lit the suns, they sang infinity's names and deathless powers in meters that reflect the moving worlds. So these were the mystic poets, past, present and the future, who were inspired to sing the name of the nameless one in a thousand ways. And as they sang, they were not just words carrying meaning, but the joy of God poured upon things, taking the form of sounds and a body of words. So it's beautifully they sang infinity's names and deathless powers in meters that reflect the moving worlds. And we have so many examples of these mystic poets, Meera, Tukaram in India, plenty of them, Tulsidas, Ramcharitmanas, from the Valmiki, right? All of them have expressed in a poetic form. And when we really read them or hear them, Aditya Sahasranam, Vishnu Sahasranam, Lalita Sahasranam, all of them carry that wonderful rhythm which one has to catch it with the inner ear, otherwise one loses it. It's not just names of Vishnu, but even the meter and the rhythm is capturing something of the higher truth. And of course, Sri Aurobindo we need not mention because it brings him down. So it is understood he is far beyond all this, as we will discover. And we know sights, sound waves breaking from the soul's great deeps. It's a great mystic experience which sometimes people have when they take LSD, and the place is not a recommendation. It's dangerous, it's harmful, all that. But they experience fusing of sound and sight. It's amazing. And then you discover that actually these separate faculties are nothing but construct of the senses. This is how in mental beings the senses are organized. But there are other ways by which the senses can operate. And that is why a blind person can actually construct an image by sound if he develops it. There are stories like that. Only thing is, the ears have to be tuned to see. And when mother was asked this, she says, of course, I have ears behind my eyes. And then she added, one can see from every pore. So when we hear about Indra's pus, the spies who are Sahasraksh, it's literally true. One can see from every pore. How the blind people can see if they train. There was that India Got Talent, that show. Nice show, by the way. So in that show, previous episodes, they showed one girl was blind. They blindfolded her. She was not blind, but they completely blindfolded her in front of television. And she could read a page, and randomly people gave, just to make sure that this all not trained. And right from top to bottom, she could read the page, the book and everything. Totally blindfolded with real tight things. So this idea that only eyes can see and ears can hear is simply a convention and habit of the body developed under the mind. But in the supramental consciousness, it may work very differently. And in even a spiritualized consciousness, new things can emerge. And one of them is sights, sound waves breaking from the soul's great deeps. What the soul sees comes in the form of sound waves. Some loss to the person and his trip of thought in a motionless ocean of impersonal power sat mighty, visioned with the infinite's light, just like the Himalayas described in Kalidas, in Birth of the War God, where he describes Himalayas. Sri Aurobindo has translated beautifully, like Himalayas sitting majestically with his two arms dipping into the eastern and the western ocean. So if you read that description, it looks like Sri Aurobindo is speaking of himself, sitting on the chair with two arms, mapping, measuring the earth. That's how Sri Aurobindo translates Kalidas, those lines, that the Himalaya measuring the earth. So he's come alive with his two arms dipping in the eastern and the western waters. Majesty. So we have that. Sat mighty, visioned with the infinite's light. Just few lines, we'll just finish it. Or comrades of the everlasting will surveyed the plan of past and future time. They were just witness to all Trikaldarshi. Some winged like birds out of the cosmic sea and vanished into a bright and featureless vast. So some escaped into that hush forever. Some silent watched the universal dance or helped the world by world indifference. How do people help the world by being indifferent? Because they come out of a... It's like an evolutionary hierarchy where there is an interconnectedness of the chain. So every soul that comes out after reaching a certain point draws hundreds to fill that gap. It's like a vacuum. Literally the theory of the vacuum. So somebody who has arrived at that state and is indifferent, by the very fact, he draws around him hundreds of cosmic forces towards him. And by that very fact, there is an upliftment of that consciousness. How? By being world indifferent, they helped. Some washed no more, merged in a lonely self, absorbed in the trance from which no soul returns. We'll talk about this trance tomorrow. All the occult world lines forever closed. the chains of birth and person cast away. So they escape into the ineffable forever and for good. All the lines of evolution, they close. Some uncompanioned reached the ineffable by the sheer power of tapasya, alone, leaving the world behind them, they reached the ineffable. So we'll stop here. Lot of things coming with this passages, but we'll touch upon them tomorrow.